Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. Without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me about anything related to food, weight, or body image issues, my number is 818-602-4929. I would love to talk to you about anything that's on your mind. Again, 818-602-4929. So Monday was the end of my eight-day restart challenge that I had on Facebook, and it was really successful and really amazing, and I was so moved and just really blown away by how hard people worked. That doesn't even sound right. How willing they were to dig deep and reflect and really figure out what was eating at them and share, and the epiphanies and the realizations and the recognitions were just very, very incredible to behold. And I was just so proud of everyone in that challenge. And it just ended on Monday. And so people are talking about, like, okay, what did they learn from it? What's the next step? And someone said, and I thought this was so interesting and so important. She said, "I found myself today wondering, if I address the weight issue, what will be left? It has totally consumed my life ever since I can remember. I know it's normal to have this fear, but I also don't want to sabotage myself before I even start. What are your suggestions?" And then someone else said, she had the same fear. She said, "If I take the spotlight off what I'm comfortable with, disliking my weight, what's going to take its place?" And this is such an important thing to recognize, even, that focusing on your weight keeps you from focusing on other things in your life. And sometimes we use a preoccupation with weight as a distraction from other painful thoughts or feelings, which may or may not be conscious. You may or may not be aware of these conflicts. But the good news is that when we explore and process what's hidden, those hidden fears, thoughts, or ideas, we deal with them for good, and they no longer control us. So whatever it is that you're protecting yourself from by focusing on your weight, you can change. It actually reminded me of early on when I think I was still a trainee, I had this group for women who were struggling with binge eating. And this one woman in the group, I'm going to call her Jane. Jane was very resistant to the idea that there was something going on in her, something going on in her head and her heart, some conflict, that there was something that was eating at her. She couldn't imagine that there was some conflict within her mind that was causing her to use food for comfort or distraction or soothing or enactment or something. And she was just quite certain that the problem was cake. Problem was cake. There was no other problem. She had a cake problem. She didn't have a problem in her mind relating to herself or dealing with her feelings or her conflicts or wanting more or feeling empty or any of the things that it could have been, and the things that we talked about in the group. So on the last day of the group, this was an eight-week group, and on the last day, I brought in this magic wand that I had found over the weekend in some store. And I've been told it is a real magic wand because it works just slowly. So I brought in my magic wand, and I waved it over the group, and I waved it over Jane, and I said, okay, Jane, if this magic wand could take away all of your thoughts about cake, all of your thoughts about your weight, about the 20 pounds you want to lose, all of the thoughts that are constantly occupying your mind, what would be left? Kind of like what this person said in the group, what would be left? And she looked at me and just blurted out, if I were not thinking about those 20 pounds, I might be thinking about leaving my husband. And the group just went absolutely quiet because we all heard the truth and the terror in her words. So for Jane, focusing on 20 pounds and focusing on cake was a very effective way to avoid the realization that there were deep, deep problems in her marriage. And, you know, why did she wait until the last session of the group? Probably because then, again, unconsciously, not purposely, but I think unconsciously, she said it because then she wasn't going to come back next week and talk about it. So as you can see, if you are focused on your weight, if you are focused on what you're eating, something is eating at you. And that's what we want to discover. So if you would like to answer this question, imagine my magic wand. I am waving it over you. It's very pretty. It's got an angel in the middle with like a little stone that, I don't know, a ruby or something. And it's got all the, it's a beautiful wand and it's very powerful. I'm waving it over you. I'm going to take away all thoughts of food, weight, and body image. What is left? What is on your mind? I'm very interested, so give me a call and let's talk about it. 818-602-4929. So in the meantime, I thought I would share some more of the challenge that I started to talk to you guys about last week. So last week, because even though the challenge is over on Facebook, it's all of the things that we talked about are good to think about throughout the year. So on our first day, it was about recommitting to appreciating and loving yourself. And then the second day, we're talking about removing roadblocks that stop us from attaining our goals and our dreams. Kind of like what I was saying with the magic wand. You know, there's a reason that you're not doing what you want to do or that you're doing something you don't want to do. So one thing that you can do, a practical strategy, is start out by writing everything that's stopping you from being happy. And don't just consider what's going on in your life. Think about the beliefs you have, the assumptions that contribute to your unhappiness. Do you have a belief that, oh, nothing is ever going to change? Do you believe you need to lose weight to feel happy or confident? Do you think that people will like you more if you were thinner, or you would be more loved or lovable if you just blank, fill in the blank, whatever that is? And, I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we could make people like us better by losing weight? I mean, what power? How amazing. You lose weight, people like you. It's the ultimate omnipotence. You control the world by controlling your weight. Unfortunately, that's not the case. It is an illusion of power. Because, you know, when I say to people, well, would you like your friends better if they were thinner? And they always say, oh, that's ridiculous. Of course not. I love my friends because of who they are. And yet, somehow it seems reasonable that if you lost weight, people would like you better. So see if you have any assumptions like that and challenge them. And if you have a belief that you can't have love or happiness or satisfaction or whatever it is that you want until the weight is gone, things are different, then you believe that you can't be happy until something changes, and that's always going to limit you. You're never going to fully be happy. So our minds our minds are like a garden. You know, I love this garden metaphor, the weed and the root, right? Diets are like plucking weeds. We got to get to that proverbial root. This is all very ironic because, guys, I have a total black thumb. Totally. Like, I can barely keep a plastic plant alive in my office. I can't grow anything. So the fact that I have all these gardening metaphors is very ironic. Just thought I'd share that with you. So, okay, our minds are like a garden. If we plant seeds of hopelessness, criticism, and frustration, we will grow despair, hate, and anger. But if we plant hope, acceptance, and compassion, then peace, love, and change will flourish. So, got to think of it as a soil of psychological safety where you can find the capacity and the desire to change and progress without struggle. So imagine reaching your goals without beating yourself up all the time. So it takes more than understanding what's going on. Insight is one thing, but it doesn't change anything. Like the Oprah aha moment, I love Oprah. I especially love Oprah right now. I am loving my Oprah. But the aha moment does not change anything. You just go, oh, I recognize it, like Jane in the group. Oh, aha, I realize that I am afraid I'll lose my husband. I'm afraid I'm going to leave my husband if I'm not thinking about losing weight. That means, now I've got to deal with my marriage. So the aha moment is just identifying what's going on, and then you've got to do the work of working through, which is always very scary when you're beginning it, but when you're on the other end of it, it is just such a wonderful relief, and you're not carrying around the weight, quote unquote, the weight of what is weighing on you. So, take a few minutes to think about and then actually write down and record what you want to happen this year. What is it that you want to change? Because when you put it in words and you put your intention in words, it's very powerful. And that's the first step towards actualizing them. So that was day two of our challenge. Day three, I started out by telling people, hey, guess what? It is easy to break a pencil in half. You take the pencil by each end, you push a little bit, and snap, pencil easily splits in two. But it's a lot harder to break a bundle of 20 pencils in half. No matter how strong you are not going to be able to break a pencil when it's surrounded by 20 pencils. You can't break a group of pencils. You can only break one. So weak things can become strong when given support. And if we look at nature, we find the same lesson, right? Most animals live in communities instead of on their own. Fish and birds move in groups to protect themselves when predators attack. Monkeys dwell in groups. You get the idea. Beavers build better shelters and dams. I could go on and on. You get the idea. So, you know, we can't do much on our own. If we're dropped in a desert or a forest, we would have a hard time surviving on our own unless we took some really cool How to Survive in the Desert class, which is like one of those things that I always mean to do but never do. And I imagine it's true of most people. So we really need other people to survive and to thrive. And the same thing emotionally. We rely on the people around us for love, strength, support, and to fulfill our needs. So learning to rely on each other rather than suffer in silence is one of the great lessons of life. And so day three's challenge was to rely on someone else, to lean on a friend or a loved one by sharing the goals that they had created. So first you create the goals, you put them in writing, you put intention on it, and then the next step is share them with someone. and, you know, talk to someone else about what's going on with you, what stumbling blocks you may have uncovered, and what solutions you have planned for when your stumbling blocks threaten your progress. You will be surprised at how people may respond. I'm getting a message that that there is a problem getting through on the phone lines. So I am going to let my engineer know about that. And hopefully, if you guys are trying to call, you'll be able to get in. People are I'm getting word that there's a really fast busy signal. So let me just tell my engineer. Sorry, guys. I can't multitask. Okay. So, here's my engine. Okay. All right, guys. So that was the third challenge. And people said that it was one of the most difficult things that they could do, because they were really afraid that their friends and loved ones were going to judge them or laugh at them, or they just wouldn't understand, or that they'd shame them. But they did it. And when they did it and they tested it out, they were all so surprised at how people were able to really understand and be there for them. None of the things that they expected happened. Nobody laughed at them. Nobody mocked them. Nobody shamed them. They all got incredible support from the people. So even if you're unsure about whether someone's going to understand you, even if you feel like you don't want to be exposed or like vulnerable with people, you can give it a try and you will be pleasantly surprised, I'm quite sure. All right, so my engineer Ronan is still working on the phone line, so if you're trying to get in, I will let you know when hopefully he'll let me know, and then I'll let you know, because I'd love to talk to you about what's going on with you. And just so you have the number handy, again, it's 818-602-4929. Okay, so day four of the challenge. Day four of the challenge was reverence. So think about the word reverence. Think about the word revere. Now, you probably have heard of the midnight ride of Paul Revere, who desperately rode through the Massachusetts countryside to alert John Hancock and Samuel Adams that the British were coming. The British were coming. So imagine how desperately Revere rode that day. His entire life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness depended on his success. And so it is with that desperate and passionate spirit of Paul Revere, I want to give you the challenge of reverence, which is to revere your body for who she or he is. Revere your body. What if we were to revere our own bodies as desperately as Revere rode that night? What if we were to believe that our own life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness didn't depend on a diet, but instead depended on a healthy relationship with ourselves? What if we desperately pursued our health and happiness as passionately as the early American patriots fought? How would our relationship with ourselves and with our bodies change? So we may not be on the front lines battling for territory with the British, but we are engaged daily in a fight for freedom, which is why I call my program Win the Diet War, my website, Win the Diet War. Liberate yourself from dieting and from self-defeating thoughts. So we want freedom, freedom from self-loathing, self-criticism, and self-hate. Now, just like those early soldiers, we are outgunned and we are outnumbered. You know the beauty industry is a $445 billion $445 billion industry. And it depends on us feeling deeply inadequate. It depends on us feeling terrible about ourselves. The weight loss industry, the diet industry, is a $60 billion a year business. I also got read that Americans alone spent something like $8 billion on plastic surgery last year. And this is just, there's something wrong with this, right? But, you know, every ad, commercial, social media post, picture, song, magazine article, if you really pay attention, you can see it's often got one goal in mind, which is making you feel inadequate about your body, feeling inadequate about the way you look. And of course, then they make it seem like, oh, buy this product, go on this diet, and you will look the way you want. In fact, I posted this video, which is so telling. I'm going to post it on my Facebook page if you guys want to check it out. It is a video where it shows this woman who comes in, pictures are taken of her. I don't even know why I can't talk, but she's photographed. That's the word I'm looking for. She's photographed, and then the airbrushing and the photoshopping begins, and by the end of it, you see that she doesn't even remotely look, like the person that she actually looks like, but pictures that are similarly photoshopped and changed are what's presented to us as realistic and attainable, and it simply is not. So, you know, so much of, if not all of, what we see in ads is fake. Forget fake news, fake advertising. People are airbrushed and photoshopped, and we're told that if we don't look like these artificial images, we have failed and we're worthless, or we're just not as good as we could be. So, you know what? It is hard to fight this barrage of messages that we're not good enough. But this is where reverence comes in. Reverence. How do you define reverence? It's not a word that you hear a lot. But reverence is the profound, adoring, and awed respect we have for something. The profound, adoring, and awed respect we have for something. So imagine what it would be like to revere your body for all that it is. It is an incredible machine that breathes, blinks, beats, all without us asking. Imagine looking into the mirror and saying, I accept you, or I am so grateful for my feet that carry me from place to place, for my legs that keep me chasing after my kids or my grandkids, for my hands that touch my loved ones, my lungs that take in each breath without me asking, and my mind that refuses to quit on me or give up. What if you were to revere your body, to have reverence for your body rather than hating your body? The difference is you would experience something in your life that would be as shocking as that scrappy Continental Army beating the English militia back in Paul Revere's day, right? Pretty amazing. So, again, I want to reiterate the power of reverence. Reverence is more than appreciation. Appreciation is light. Reverence is deep. It's profound, and it's respectful. So it's the most profound feeling of gratitude that we can feel. And this deep feeling of awe, respect, and gratitude dramatically changes our relationship with ourselves, with others, and with food. Now, it takes time to rewire our brains and our assumptions. So if you've been telling yourself for years that you are not good enough, don't expect change overnight. Accept that you're working towards the goal of self-reverence and appreciate the gains that you experience every day. So what I told people in the challenge, what I'm telling you, is start by telling yourself one thing that you appreciate about your body every single day. And soon you're going to find three things to be grateful, two or three, and three or four, and then two or three dozen things to be grateful about. The important thing is to start where you are and then take baby steps towards creating not only a better future in which one day you feel better about yourself, but a more enjoyable now. So take some time today to thank your body. So some suggestions that you could do to thank your body are to take a great bubble bath or put on some wonderful lotion or make a list of the things you are grateful for that your body does. Or take a walk outside, enjoy the fresh air. I have to tell you that this is the challenge that most people gulped at. Like, most people were like, whoa, what? I can't revere my body. I hate my body. But what was incredible was when they took the challenge, the kind of shift that happens, the kind of just totally different way of looking at themselves that they started to develop. It was really powerful. I mean, everyone who posted was like, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do this. I really didn't want to do this. But I'm glad that I did. And I'm actually looking up on the Facebook page to see if I can find some of the things that people said. But it was just, if you think you can't do it, do it anyway. You would be surprised. You would be surprised at the things that you see that you like. And when you start looking for what you like, you're going to see it more and more. I mean, we find the evidence we look for. So if you have evidence of, hey, if you're looking for evidence that you're not good enough, you're not the right weight, you're not the right look, there's something just not right enough about you, you're going to find it. You're going to say, oh, you know, my eyes are not as big as the eyes of that Photoshop model, or my legs are not as long as they should be, or I weigh more than I should, or you're going to just look and you're going to see all the ways you don't measure up. But if you say, you know what, forget that. I am going to look at what I appreciate about myself. One woman wrote, and she's like, you know, I have the world's straightest nose, so I'm slightly paraphrasing, and my hair has been called my crowning glory. And it was awesome. Like, you could just feel her appreciation for herself just start to be bubbling up. And that's what we want. We want to find the evidence we look for. People saw bodies that had born children and they were grateful to their bodies instead of disgusted by them. One woman wrote something about her stretch marks that she'd always been so ashamed of them, but now she looked at them and she thought they were beautiful because they represented the battle that she'd had, that she'd won in coming to some sense of self-love. So you get the idea. It's super difficult and it's very powerful. So I hope that you will give it a try. It is hard, but anything worth doing is usually not easy, right? Okay, so then the next challenge, and apparently we're still having phone issues, so I'm just going to keep talking. It might just be me today talking, but hopefully you're going to get some benefit. You can call in next week or later if we get this resolved. Okay, so now I almost never talk about food, but, you know, people talk to me about food all the time. So think about it. When did eating become so complicated? We have so many different diets. Low fat, high fat, low carb, low, you name it. cleanses, keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, no sugar, gluten-free, organic, non-GMO. I mean, the list goes on and on. I just get stressed out even thinking about all these diets. But when was the last time you tuned into your body? When was the last time you listened to how hungry you were or how full you were? Or when was the last time you asked your body what it was hungry for? Now, when I suggest this, which is getting in touch with what your body wants, people tell me, oh, well, if I do that, my body's going to say that it wants cake and pizza. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a deeper wish to nurture yourself, not emotionally eat, or not eat out of a sense of the anticipation of deprivation. Because if you're told you can't have pizza or ice cream or cake, what's the first thing you're going to want? The thing you can't have. So you're going to have pizza and ice cream and cake, and then you're going to think, oh, I'm not going to have this until I lose that 20 pounds, so I better have a lot of it now, like you can bank pizza. I'm going to have a lot of it now, and then I'm going to be deprived. And so that makes you lose touch with what you want and lose touch with your ability to regulate yourself. So think about, when's the last time you enjoyed eating a meal? When's the last time you took pleasure from what you were eating? You know, food is supposed to be enjoyable, right? And often when we turn to food to resolve emotional feelings, it's partly enjoyable and partly ridden with shame, and we never really enjoy it. If you're eating something and you're thinking, I shouldn't be eating this, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, then you're not truly going to savor it and enjoy it. You're going to feel good but bad, and the bad eventually takes over. So our minds love to be referees when we eat. I can't do a referee voice, but imagine a referee voice, you know, whistle blowing, you know, too many carbs on the field, 10-yard penalty, eating out of bounds. You get evicted from the game for eating a piece of cake, thrown out of the sport entirely for eating without counting calories. Whoo, breaking the rules. Our internal referee is so restrictive that we can hardly take a step without getting into trouble. We can't enjoy the game of life because we're so worried about breaking those rules. And because we're always messing up, because who can go by those rules all the time? We cannot possibly follow those rules. So when we try to follow these impossible rules and it doesn't work, inevitably we break the rules because that's the only way to live, then we give up, we feel defeated, and then we often turn to food to shove that shame of failure away. But let me tell you, there is a different way. Just think about it. Where did these rules come from? Who created this endless encyclopedia of diet rules and regulations? I mean, it is an encyclopedia, isn't it? Well, you know, I'll tell you who. The people and the industry who depend on you dieting. That $60 billion diet industry depends on you dieting. I mean, listen, think about it. How did our ancestors survive thousands of years without counting calories or getting on the scale? They listened to their bodies. The secret to making peace with food and finding freedom for once and all is to throw out all the rules and only have one rule, and that is listen to your body and honor what it tells you. And again, this is another scary one, right? Being asked to throw away all these food rules can feel like you're being asked to, you know, to swim the English Channel without a life preserver. You think that without your food rules, you're gonna sink. You're gonna go crazy. You're gonna eat the kitchen. You're gonna eat everything in sight, and it's all gonna be horrible. You're gonna blow up like a balloon and be bigger than ever. It's not true. It's not true. So there have been more than one study that shows that when people are given permission to eat any food they want, they ate less of their forbidden foods and chose healthier options. This was, I've talked about this before, there was a study in which they were trying to prove that food addiction was real. So they asked the participants to eat their forbidden foods, all of which were very sugary or fatty. And the premise was, well, because food addiction is an issue in our brains, these people are going to start eating their forbidden foods and they're not going to be able to stop when given permission. Instead, you know what happened? The people ate less. They ate less of their forbidden foods when they had permission to eat them. So when you take away the rules and the guilt for breaking the rules, you can decide whether you want that food or not. And then you eventually reach the point where you're eating intuitively. And I'll give you a great example of this. I just did an interview with Iris Ruth Pastor, who's a Huffington Post blogger. She's an amazing woman, and she now has a podcast, and she just wrote a book about her recovery from bulimia after 47 years. And so she was talking to me about this idea of intuitive eating, which is something you've got to step into. And you can't just go from binging or overeating or being focused on or preoccupied with food to intuitively eating. It is a process. But here's the benefit of that process, which is that, so my younger daughter's 10, and I always gave her options like, well, if you're hungry, you can have an apple or a banana, or you can have some cookies, or you can have, you know, peanut butter toast. Or I just gave her all options as if they were the same. And people be shocked by this, like, well, she's going to choose the cookie every time. I'm like, no, she chooses, more often she chooses the fruit, because I taught her from birth to be an intuitive eater. I never rewarded her with food or anything like that. So last Halloween, not this recent one, but the one before, we're in Malibu, and we've gone to every place in the colony, and she's got like a giant king-sized pillowcase full of candy, and so do all her friends. And she said, oh, I'm hungry. And my husband said, oh, well, you have all that candy. Why don't you just have some candy? And she said, no, I want real food. And that's what happens when you don't have the anticipation of deprivation. When you allow yourself to get in touch with what your body wants, your body will tell you. And every once in a while, you know what? Have some candy, have some cake, have some whatever. But then you'll enjoy it more if you have dessert versus I'm going to eat that because I want to change the way I feel. So your rules about what foods you can and cannot eat, when you can and cannot eat, where you can and cannot eat, these rules are not helping you. This restriction mentality only makes you want those foods more, and the chances of you craving those foods becomes a lot higher. It skyrockets. Restriction leads to overeating or binging. For every diet, there is an equal and opposite binge. It's like if I tell you, you know what? I want to tell you something. You absolutely cannot think about penguins. Don't do it. Whatever you do, don't think about penguins. Don't think about how cute they are. Don't think about how cute that penguin waddle is or how graceful they look when they swim. And absolutely do not think about a cute penguin family with a penguin mom, a penguin dad, a penguin baby hanging out on a floating iceberg together. Do not think about penguins. Okay, what are you thinking about? Did you think about penguins? Of course you did. So what's going to happen if you tell yourself, don't think about cookies, you don't want cookies, don't think about those cookies. I'm not thinking about the cookies, I don't want the cookies. Oh, actually, those cookies would be so good is probably at some point your next thought. I love cookies. Don't think about the cookies. Yeah, you know what? All you're going to think about is cookies. You're only going to be able to think about cookies. And then, eventually, you're going to eat the cookies. And not just one or two cookies because they're delicious. All the cookies. So telling yourself you can't eat the cookies will likely lead you to eating all the cookies. But giving yourself unconditional permission to eat the cookies, as the people, as the science researchers did in those studies, giving yourself permission to eat those cookies or whatever your quote-unquote, you know, bad food is, that will decrease your obsession with the cookies. You will find it easier and natural to make better decisions. And I have had people who were absolutely convinced that they were food addicts, sugar addicts. They would think about sugar all the time. They would tell me they could feel it in their brain when they ate it, and it was a total physiological addiction, and they couldn't stop. And, you know, one woman would bake chocolate chip cookies with her daughters, and she'd make up some pretext, like, to get the daughter out of the room so she could eat cookie dough in silence, in safety. I mean, people would go to these extreme lengths to get what they called their fix. And they never thought that I was right about this. They never thought that they could ever eat intuitively. They never thought they could have just a cookie or two or a bite of cookie dough. And after working through, you know, what was eating at them, what was weighing on them, they found that they could. So even if you are convinced that you are a full-blown sugar addict, and that maybe I'm talking about other people, not you, believe me, you can change your relationship to sugar, to yourself, to food. So I highly recommend, and this was the challenge, to re-engage with your body. Listen to your hunger fullness signals. Listen to your taste buds. Listen to your level of satisfaction. Listen to the messages that your body sends you. When you're learning to re-engage with your body, you got to eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. And that may take some practice, because a lot of people tell me they haven't been hungry for 20 years. They have no idea what it feels like to be hungry. They wouldn't know hunger if it came up and said boo. But you can re-engage with those hunger signals. And here is a good way to think about it. What's the difference between physical hunger and emotional hunger? Physical hunger is physical. You have like a gurgling sensation in your stomach. Maybe you feel lightheaded. And you're so hungry that almost anything that's available to eat, you're going to eat, because you just don't want to be hungry anymore. Whereas emotional hunger is when something looks good or sounds good, or, I'm going to feel better when I eat that. When you're eating something to change the way you feel, that is emotional. That is emotional eating. So getting in touch with when you're hungry and then when you're full is going to be life-changing. So one thing that you can do today you can start, is pay attention to those physical hunger signals. When you start to feel hungry, make yourself a meal, something that you like, not something you think you should have. Something that you like, something that is pleasing to you and to your taste buds. Indulge yourself. Take the time to taste those favorite foods and savor it. Now, when I did this again, people had a hard time. They had a hard time initially. They thought, I can't do that. I'm supposed to have, you know, salad. That I can't have what I really want. But they did the challenge, and I think one woman said that she made pasta, and normally she wouldn't let herself have it, but she had it, she enjoyed it, she didn't have as much of it as she thought she was going to, because she had permission to have it, and it just was a very satisfying experience, whereas usually pasta would be something she might binge on or then feel guilty about. And then if you feel guilty about eating pasta, you're more likely to use some other kind of food to comfort yourself or distract yourself from the horrible, guilty feeling, and it becomes this terrible cycle. So give this a try. I think that you're going to be pleasantly surprised by what happens when you get in touch with what you're hungry for as far as food goes. Okay, so then, the phones must be working. I've got a caller. Whoops, no, I don't. The phones are not working. I do not have a caller. All right, so I'm going to go on to the next day's challenge. So let's think about stress. Life is stressful. Sometimes your husband crashes his car on the way to work, or your daughter's choice in boyfriends is, shall we say, less than ideal, or your boss can be a royal pain, or money can be tight, or all kinds of things can happen. So in these moments, it's crucial to have a special space that you can retreat to. So I heard about this incredible educator over the summer, and so there's this teacher who created what she called a quiet corner in her classroom. And this corner was designated for students to relax or think by themselves when something stressful had happened to them. So the student could spend 10 minutes in the quiet corner before returning to normal activity at school. So one morning, a kid who was usually very animated and very, you know, loud and, you know, open and jovial, like an outgoing kid, comes in and heads right to the quiet corner. Just boom. And he took 10 minutes and then another 10 minutes. And he was just unusually quiet and still. And after about 20 minutes of being in the quiet corner, he got up, he went to his seat, and he started working. So at break time, the teacher said, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? And the kid said that his Uncle Johnny had died over the weekend and that he needed some time in the quiet corner to say goodbye to him, and he knew that the quiet corner was the best place to do it. So touching, right? I think this was something like third grade. So the teacher was really touched, and the student's class decided to have a picture of Uncle Johnny placed in the quiet corner for a week. And the student mourned the passing of his favorite uncle every day in the quiet corner. And when I heard about this, you know, oh, so heartwarming, so sweet, so poignant. So I started thinking about how important space is. You know, a nice, clean space is just so, you can breathe. It feels so good. A messy room with full of clothes strewn on the floor and, you know, the 40 dresses you tried on before you went out last night over a chair, that makes you feel even more anxious and stressed. So it's really important to think about your space. So in this teacher's classroom, the quiet corner, it was just a desk, a comfy chair, a plant. Not much to it. It was just the space that was so helpful. So having a quiet corner of your own will really help you manage the stress and anxiety of life. It could be a place where you can breathe, you can relax, and you can find inner peace again. So the challenge is to redecorate and create your own quiet corner. Create a special place in your house, a quiet corner for you or you and your family, actually for you, just for you. It doesn't have to be expensive. You just can move a few things around, even. You could just put a pillow on the floor, or, you know, have a plant there, or put a photo nearby. Just surround yourself with your favorite colors or things and make it just someplace where it's a real sanctuary. And I really think that if you create a quiet corner for yourself where you can think, where you can breathe, where you can be, that is a better refuge than escaping from stress through food. So these are some things that you can do today if you'd like. And I think that even though some of them might be scary or you might think that you can't do them, I guarantee you that you can. And as the saying goes, nothing new ever happens in your comfort zone. You got to step out of your comfort zone in order to feel better. So that's our show today. Thank you for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio. And by the way, there is still time to join my new Sweeten Your Life 30-Day Challenge. It's only for members of my Kick the Diet Habit community. It's going to be really transformational. I can't talk today. It's going to be really transformational. People had such good results in my 8-day restart challenge, so I'm super excited about what's going to happen in 30 days. Just go to kickthediethabit.com and get more information. And once you get the program, where there's a discount code for $50 off, if you get the program, then you'll get an invitation to join the Sweeten Your Life 30-Day Challenge that starts Monday. I really hope that you'll join us. Thank you again for being here. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.